On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Usher Fried to uncover the tax advantage realtors already have.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, you're going to get to discover the tax advantage that realtors already possess. Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, well, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Now, today, we've got the privilege to learn from a person who specializes in reducing one's income taxes, more specifically. Now, ultimately, he's been doing this for years in the cost segregation and depreciation business. I would describe today's Maverick as somebody who's absolutely passionate about getting every last tax deduction from real estate for his clients. Today's Maverick, I've got Usher Fried here with me on the show. Usher, say for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure.
My name is Usher Fried. I work for Madison Specs, one of the largest cost segregation firms in the country. I help my clients not just utilize the cost segregation, but I make sure that the cost segregation goes the extra mile and has the effect that they want it to have on their personal bank account.
Let's talk about cost segregation. Say for some folks and maybe some limited partners, they know about depreciation, but they don't know maybe the inner workings of cost segregation, or maybe they've heard of it and it is what it is. And there's also some moving pieces, meaning we got tax laws changing, some things sunsetting over the next handful of years. So there's some moving pieces to that. So maybe talk about what that is. And then I want to go deeper in terms of who it helps.
Yeah, so that's great. Everyone knows depreciation, and it's one of the biggest incentives to get involved in real estate. Depreciation, depreciation, dichotomy, the value of the properties are going up, but yet you could take a loss on your returns. You could take a loss on the property, even though you're actually making money on the property. So it itself is a hard concept to really get, but everyone knows that depreciation allows you to write off your gains on your tax returns, right? So now that's just standard depreciation. People don't know much more than just that. Now that depreciation, which gets put in automatically as long as your CPA is filing the standard line of depreciation, the simple calculation, it's really just a sliver of what you could actually be getting, right? So the way depreciation works is you look at a property that's going to depreciate over time. So the lazy way to do it and the way the IRS wants you to do it, which is good for them, not good for you, is to just go ahead and take that depreciable basis, you know, whatever you spent on the building, you minus off the land, and you divide that over, let's say, 39 years for commercial properties. And they want you doing that because this only allows you to take a little bit over a long time. I created a meme that shows a guy waiting 39 years to use up his depreciation. It's quite a long time, right? So
correct.
It's a great incentive, but if you could supercharge that and bring that to the forefront, and give you extra cash flow to roll into more deals and then bring that depreciation to the forefront, front load it, you could be getting into 10 times more deals than you're getting now. That's just the standard line depreciation. And that's what cost segregation is. Like I said, the lazy way to do it, to calculate the depreciation, is over 39 years. You just divide it, lazy, boring. That's what it does. Now, in truth, in reality, and that's why I like to call cost segregation front-loading the depreciation, accelerated depreciation, but more importantly, accurate depreciation. And that's just what it is. Because your property is, quote-unquote, taking a paper loss of depreciating over time, but it's not doing so in actuality on a linear basis the way the IRS would like you to believe, right? You're not going ahead and evenly losing value to the property over 39 years. There are parts of the property that are depreciating in a couple of years. There are parts of the property that are depreciating in a few more years than that. And then there are some parts that are depreciating at 39 years. So the IRS is not just going
to
let...
Let's put some color to that. When people hear, oh, my property's losing value, what do we really mean by that? And I'll touch on a couple of things and I want you to take it from there. Carpet does not last 39 years. Your roof is not going to last 39 years. And certainly I'm in Iowa, certainly not going to last 39 years in Iowa. Your furnace is not going to last 39 years. So I just touched on a handful. There's a whole bunch of components that make up that building that are not going to last 39 years, meaning there's wear and tear. You're going to have to replace them. And the government is aware of that and they allow you to depreciate those things over a period of time. You hit it on the head. The lazy investor's way is just do it evenly over 39 years. Or the more accurate way is things don't depreciate. Things don't use up their life evenly over 39 years.
Exactly. My mugs have broken in under 10 years. If I buy a property with a mug in it, that's furniture that could be put into the cost basis. We're not going to say that this mug is going to last 39 years. Now, to touch on your question that you started with, what does it mean that it's losing value, right? Like I said, it's sort of paradoxical because we get into real estate because of the appreciation, because it's going up in value.
Right.
And they're both true. So let's first hit appreciation first, right? So when you invest in a property, it goes up in value because people are willing to pay more for it because, let's say, you could get better rents over time. You could add to the building, do a value add and bring in higher rents. And you could, basically, the appreciation is based off the income that the property could produce for you, the profits it could pump out. But now let's not forget, the building is made up of material that is losing value, right? So even if somebody's willing to pay $5 million for a building that was built in 1650, the rents are high, it doesn't mean that the actual walls and the foundation and the appliances in it are really going up in value. It's that it's producing an income and that's why you're paying for. But the value of the building is actually going down, similar to driving a car. You roll the car out of the dealer, right away it starts going down in value, and eventually it will break. So that's what the depreciation is. We're looking at the building and we're seeing it deteriorate over time.
And so the cost segregation, as you stated, it more accurately reflects the depreciation life of the asset, a building, and then really the components of the building. So what is a cost segregation, and maybe what goes into that, and then talk about the bonus depreciation a little as well.
Yeah. We'll dive deep into cost segregation. Like you said, a roof doesn't last 39 years. A furnace doesn't last 39 years. And basically, there are lots of parts in the property that you bought that are not going to last 39 years. So now the IRS has a timetable of officially how long things could last for, and they have different categories. And what a cost segregation does is you send down engineers into the property, and they identify different components of that property that are depreciating on a faster timetable than the standard 39 years. So let's say a furnace would be a five-year property, countertops would be a five-year property, any appliance or any part of the property that's inside the building that you could pull out, you could rip off, you could replace. Carpet is another one, lanterns, outlets. Those are five-year properties. And what we do is we basically go into the building and we assess the value that could be given to these five-year properties. We take that total value and we're going to divide it over 5 years instead of the 39 years, which actually front loads it, right? And then there's 7-year properties and 15-year properties, and we do the same for that. So that's just a standard cost segregation without getting into bonus depreciation. Basically, putting components on shorter timetables, which allows you to take a larger chunk during the first 5 years and then the first 15 years, And then you take the rest of whatever's left over the course of the 39 years, if you still own that property, and you didn't sell it in 1031 into another property. Now, that's great. And we've been selling this since 2006. And that was what the product was. But in 2017, Trump introduced the tax reform where we basically put in bonus depreciation that he said any goes for vehicles as well. Mm-hmm. Any property that or appliance or equipment that depreciates, you could take all of that in year one, right? So the way that translates to the depreciation of a CoreSeg is that the 5 and 15 year properties, instead of waiting the 5 and 15 years and 7 years to take all of that, you could take all of that in year one. That was 100% bonus depreciation. As you mentioned, we're sort of phasing out of that. This year in 2023, we're up to 80% bonus depreciation, which means when we go into the property, we adjust the value. We assign 5 year properties, 7 year properties, and 15 year properties. Usually we divide that on a timetable. That's a regular cost segregation. Bonus depreciation is going to allow you to take all of that in year one, assuming 100% bonus depreciation. Now we're phasing out. So this year, 2023, we're at 80%. 2024 is going to be 60%, mm-hmm. and then 40%. And then you're going to see it sunset until it hopefully gets brought back.
I love this stuff because I'm a numbers geek. And so I geek out on this stuff and love to get in the weeds. But maybe for the audience's sake, who maybe isn't quite as geeky as me on this stuff, let's put some numbers around it so we can just bullet point. What does this actually mean from an investor standpoint? So the buildings, it's $1 million. Of course, depends on the asset class because different assets, an office, a self-storage facility, an industrial facility, a gas station, they have very different components and they depreciate on very different schedules. Fair to say?
Yes.
Okay. So we're just going to do an easy, you know, maybe give me one over the home plate that's relatively average, an office or an industrial building or a retail building, wherever you want to choose. It's $1 million. Roughly what percentage of that ends up in year one depreciable number?
Right. So it's a case-by-case basis, like what you mentioned. But without getting deep into the calculations, I'd just like to say, let's say for residential, for multifamily, you're looking at 10 to 15% of the total purchase price, right? Of that, you're going to go ahead and put that into 5 and 15 year properties. Now, they don't do it that way, but at the end of the day, that's the product. Whatever you spent on the building, it's going to end up being between 10 to 15% on that kind of building. Mobile home parks will be a lot more. Gas stations could be 100%.
100%.
Yeah. Bonus depreciated.
Correct.
Yeah. But it's going to be 10 to 15%.
Buy $1 million for $1 million, put $300,000 down, $100,000 to $150,000, roughly. Every case is different, is year one depreciation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Significant. Okay. So this helps everybody. Anybody who's an investor who also has income, it helps. Yes.
Yes. It helps. Solely for the investment, that's always like the reason to do it because the returns that you'll get on the investment will be tax-free a lot of times. But then as we get into the real estate professional status, you can see that it could even go a lot longer than just that.
That's where I'm going with this. You're taking me down the rabbit hole. So real estate professional status. So of course it helps every investor, but it actually helps a segment of investors at a much higher level. Some people are limited to passive investors those who do not have real estate professional status may only deduct their passive income. So passive losses, which is what depreciation is, it gets passed through, may only be deductible against their passive income unless you're a real estate professional, meaning a real estate professional tax status. So let's go down that path. What in the world is a real estate professional tax status? How do you get it? And then ultimately, what does that mean from a tax standpoint? How does it benefit those folks even more?
Right. So to begin, the reason why it's so murky and so complex, because there's no way to explain it without absolutely boring you, right? And that is the challenge over here. But in basics, if you have a job in real estate, right, if you're a real estate broker, I'll start with this and we'll go through the qualifications backwards, right? If you're a real estate broker, you're an independent contractor, assuming that you work 750 hours on your job and you don't have another job, you are most definitely going to qualify for the real estate professional status. If you're a leasing agent, if you're a contractor, there is a lot of gray area that involves this. And not all CPAs agree on certain qualifications, and which is why you always have to consult with your own CPA. But it is important to be educated on the basics to, first of all, bring up the conversation with your CPA. And second of all, know if you need a new CPA. right? Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of people that I speak to that never heard about it, don't know about it, and are literally paying taxes every single year for absolutely no reason. So if you have a job in real estate, mortgage broker is not included in that. It has to be actually in real estate. An accountant that helps with real estate does not count as well. But if you have a job in real estate, a plumber, potentially an electrician, contractor, excavator, real estate broker, leasing agent, we could go on with the list, which I would like to compile. You potentially should listen up and get through these details and do it right, because you could literally be paying $0 in taxes every single year.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Okay, so how's that the case? Somebody has real estate professional status. They qualify naturally. What I hear you saying is talk to your CPA, get additional details relative to do you qualify, talk to your CPA, get a new CPA, find out the right answer that's applicable to you. All right, so they qualify. Now, what does that actually mean then? And how does the depreciation, how does it all come together?
Yeah, so I'll run through the qualifications. So you need 750 hours in a real trade or business. There's 11 different activities and they are very abstract: developing, construction, reconstruction, leasing, selling, right? They're one word property management. They're one word activities that include a whole bunch of little activities that you might not realize that you are included in them, right? So that's doing 750 hours in one of those qualifying activities gets you to first base. Now, if you have another job that you're spending more time in, then you could have 1,000 hours in real estate. It's not going to count. You need 750 hours and you need that you spent more time in the real trade or business than you did in any other business. Mm-hmm. That goes ahead and gives you the real estate professional status. That gives you the ability to potentially use the depreciation to offset your regular income. A third qualification, which doesn't affect our real estate professional, but now even if you are a real estate professional and you have that status, in order to turn a passive activity, a passive income, a passive loss, which is real estate is a passive income, it's a passive loss. If you want to go ahead and change that into an active income and an active loss, you got to show that you're active on that business, right? So that's the material participation. Another abstract term, you have to materially participate. And that just means being active in the business and showing that this is not just some investment that you have sitting on the side that's producing you income. You're rolling up your sleeves, you're getting involved, and you're actually participating. Now, there are one of seven tests to pass to get that, and we could get more into that, but that's a bird's eye view of qualifying for real estate professional status and using that to turn a business into an active business and take that depreciation, offset your active income.
That material participation, does it have to be in all of your real estate investments or some of your real estate investments?
Okay, great question. So it officially has to be in each and every one, but is everyone doing that, right? So, and if I own rentals, right, it would be, if you own 10 properties, it would be nearly impossible to be operating all of them without a property manager. So basically, officially you have to be, but the way around it is called the aggregate. It basically doesn't say that you don't have to be, but you participate in one property and then you go ahead and you include all the properties as one entity. So now your participation in that one property umbrellas and covers over all of your properties. So it's not that you don't have to be participating in all of them. You do. But the way you do that is by going ahead and taking 100 of your investments and saying that this is just one activity, this is just one business. And now if you're just materially participating on one of your investments, it will work for all of them.
So you have to material, I hear what you're saying. You combine everything in, you've got a portfolio of whatever, it all rolls up. So it's aggregate, your hours then get applied to the totality of your holdings. And once you pass that test, it applies to all your holdings, even passive investments you have outside of that aggregate amount, if you will. Okay, correct. Cool. All right. So then let's move forward then. So you're a real estate professional. Cool. You passed that test. The next one is you passed the investment test, what we just touched on, this aggregate component. And now you're going to be taxed So you've got the gold standard for taxation. What does that mean then for the usage of depreciation?
So now any depreciation that you're getting on your property, regardless of COSEG, it will not only work against your rental income, but it will work against your income and your wife's income. If you file together with a spouse, it will work for both of your incomes. So if she's getting a W-2, she's a secretary or she's whatever she's doing, right? She's a doctor. That whatever depreciation you're collecting from your rentals will work as a loss against her income because they are both now considered active income. Now, that is standard depreciation. So now if you're leveraging cost segregation and you're front loading that depreciation, if you have just a few investments, you literally, it could be one investment per year or two investments per year, literally mean that you're paying $0 in taxes, right? Because now all of your income is active. Both your rental income is considered active. Your regular job is considered active. The losses are considered active as well. So it's all grouped up together. Mm-hmm. You put $1 million in a property, $300,000 down payment, $150,000 is lost in that first year with a cost segregation and bonus depreciation. And you're literally not paying taxes on $150,000 straight off the bat.
Let me give you an example of where I've seen this take place. I've seen it in multiple places, of course, but one where the husband was a doctor, the wife was a realtor selling houses, right? And they had some investments. So the wife, by virtue of her role, it's a full-time job as a realtor, was a real estate professional. They aggregated the hours on their investments so that they're taxed at the real estate professional status. And then they can invest. At that point, they invest in property, of course, and take large depreciation against the doctor's income, the husband's income, right? A tremendous way to reduce down one's taxable active income in that scenario where the spouse is even outside of real estate, but it made a tremendous income on a W-2 basis.
Right. So which means that if you're a realtor or you're brokering houses, even if business is not the best it's ever been right now, depending on your spouse, you could literally be making $300,000 or $150,000, depending on how much money you're saving on taxes. And it could actually help you bring in more revenue via your real estate by giving you more cash to go ahead and invest because you're paying so little on taxes. So it's a no-brainer for anyone who's in real estate as their regular job. For example, you said a realtor, to invest in real estate because they have such an advantage over that average investor. Their returns could be lower and it's still very much worth it for them. They could be breaking even on the property and still coming home with cash.
The next statement I'm going to make, it's not a political statement. It's not. It's just a fact that was stated. But Donald Trump said, if you're in real estate and you're paying taxes, you're not doing it right. And my takeaway from that statement he made years ago was largely this, the depreciation, the ability to utilize depreciation to the investor's advantage. Reading between the lines, that's largely what he meant. And you've outlined how to actually do that from a cost segregation basis in order to front load, to utilize bonus depreciation, which is available to all of us. Nothing's, you don't have to do anything except file your returns correctly and then achieve that real estate professional status or ultimately the gold standard of taxable status as it relates to real estate.
Yeah. I mean, his $0 tax returns, we all know how he did it. Anyone in real estate knows how he did it.
Correct.
He did cost segregation and used the depreciation and is losing money. So the public gets all upset about it because he's not paying taxes.
Right.
But the government set up the system, as he talks about, the government set this up because they want us investing in real estate. They want to give extra reward to encourage people to take the risks. Why should I go ahead and leave my comfy job if there's only downside? So the government goes ahead and gives you a tremendous upside that you could take advantage of that the average folk is not going to really get.
No, there's no political statement. If I could think of another investor off my head who said it, who any of us would recognize, I would have utilized that name. Yes. What are you looking forward? We're recording this year in December 23, looking forward to 24. What are you most excited about?
So 2024, we're sunsetting bonus depreciation. So that's really like what I'm not excited about. I'm trying to just get to as many people in 2023.
Yep.
That they should know that they have the 80% bonus depreciation and the 100% bonus depreciation. I guess what I am looking forward to is that anyone with the bonus depreciation is important to know. If you bought a property in 2020 and now it's 2025 and you're looking at a COSEG, you still get 100% bonus depreciation even though we're in the year 2025. So while the Quseg part is sort of getting sunsetted, and like you asked me looking forward, right? Obviously, Quasegregation is going to make sense to different people moving as bonus depreciation gets phased out. Yep. But I am looking forward to surprising a lot of people with 100% bonus depreciation in the future years. But, or hopefully bonus depreciation comes back.
It would be incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that happens to be?
Right. Well, most people are held back, number one, due to their limited beliefs, their surroundings, and they really play into each other. We all know that someone who's set on doing something could get it done, and you could always have excuses. So the simplest way to really get around this is just change the room, hang out with different people, hang out with people that are doing much better, and let that subconsciously affect you. Because, you know, to give specific strategies on how to get to the next level is not as important as removing those subconscious barriers that are sort of blocking you in and allowing you. We all have excuses, right? They're always available. So it's just allowing you to look beyond that and not hold yourself back and focus on the opportunity.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Outside of real, what else is there to be passionate about?
That's a pure real estate man about
that. Not getting lost in the business, being there for your family, trying to make the most of real estate, but also being a good spouse, being a good father. I definitely struggle with that, being present, but not being present. So I am really passionate about, while pushing my bottom line forward to give myself and my children the best life possible, at the same time, I want to live life, be present, and not be 60 with the money, but no memories to think about. So, I mean, I'm passionate about a lot of stuff, but I think that this is the most important on my list.
Your favorite book?
My favorite book. So my favorite book, I mean, I have a favorite author. Just trying to pick which one of his books are my favorite, right? So Nassim Nicholas Taleb. So I really like him. Black Swan is his most well-known book.
Sure.
I think that is the biggest mind shift maybe possible to understanding, and it really relates a lot to anything, business and life. Yeah, his book Anti-Fragile as well. It's all basically one concept that he's sort of diving into and through a series of books, Fooled by Randomness, Black Swan. He calls it the Inserto, Anti-Fragile, and Skin of the Game, and waiting for his next book. But that said, is definitely my most favorite.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Being a yes man. It happens to be today. I told someone I knocked off an idea. But generally speaking, we need more yes people. We need more less pessimism in business. When I bring an idea to someone, I don't need him to shoot it down and tell me why it's not a good and why it's not going to work, because I could always come up with reasons why things don't work, right? So being a yes man, saying yes, being more optimistic, trying more things, making sure that you have leverage in those decisions, that the downside is not going to kill you, because that's always important. And that's what Taleb refers to a lot in his books. Go for it, but make sure that the downside, if you lose, you'll be able to pick yourself back up. So don't take any risks that could totally wipe you out. But at the same time, take those risks that won't wipe you out and have tremendous upside. And doing responsible investing is one of them. I mean, there's a whole lot, but the main focus is being a yes man, being optimistic, and bringing that energy and letting people feed off of that.
Pasha, this has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed all the inner workings, of course, because I geek out on this and I love it. But it seems like somebody like me, anybody who directly invests, those are probably the best folks for you to connect with from a business level standpoint. Either in depreciation and accelerated depreciation applies to commercial real estate. It also applies to residential houses, even if somebody bought it as a rental. Fair to say?
Yeah. So it applies to any investment property. If you house hack and you live in a house and then you go ahead and convert that into commercial property, start renting it out, you could go ahead and Quseg that, right? So it's any property that you're making money off of could get a Quseg. And it's not just rental properties. If you own a business and you own the building that your business is operating in, you could do a Quasegregation on that. It's just any property that is used for commercial purposes could get a Quseg.
And you can still do it.
Mostly. Yeah.
It's mostly in those categories. You can still do it. You know, we're in 2023, even if you didn't buy it this year.
Even if you didn't buy it this year, not only that, if you bought it this year, you only get the 80% bonus depreciation. But if you bought it from September 2017, I think September 24th, 2017, when Trump put those tax rules into play, you could get 100% bonus depreciation. And what it's going to be is going to be a catch-up bonus. Basically, whatever you took, we're going to see what you should have taken minus what you took already, and you get that difference. So cost segregation applies to any property that you're using for commercial purposes, be it residential, commercial, and that you bought in the past couple of years, I would say. Yeah.
Last question, then I'll wrap this up. You can still do this, although if somebody's listening to this in January or February, let's call it 2024, and they're like, oh, shoot, I bought the property in 23, 22, and 18, whenever. That's okay. This typically going to follow. You could do your work, have a cost segregation completed, and then file it with the tax returns. You don't need to worry about a calendar year from completing the cost segregation, only the purchase of a property.
Right, exactly. The purchase of the property is the main thing. You don't need to amend taxes either. You just have to adjust the depreciable basis, and your bank account will see the difference, right? It's not complex. We supply all the necessary paperwork. We take as much work off of your accountant as possible. We give him everything he needs to file for you. And yeah, you literally do the COSEC study in 2025 for 2022 purchase, your bank account will see the profits.
For people that want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you, where can they go? What should they do?
Well, you can find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn. Those are my two socials that I'm active on. You can email me at afreed@madisoncrest.com. That's commercialrealestateservices.com. I also do have a podcast that people on the real estate professional status, if you want to learn more about that, could tune in, where, you know, I try to make it easy, digestible to understand these abstract terms. And yeah.
Name of the podcast is?
The Real Estate Professional Status Podcast.
There you go. What it is right in the title. The links below on the show notes for everybody, for everything. Usher, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate being here.
Thank you so much, Neil. My pleasure.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.